That was the year,
recreating notable events of passing time, reviving memories of men and women who have contributed to the history of a modern world. That was the year.
Save wheat, use more corn.
Save meat, use more fish and beans.
Save fats, use just enough.
Save sugar, use syrup.
And serve the cause of freedom.
Thus did the U.S. Food Administration, under the direction of Herbert Hoover, the man who for several years had fed Belgium, inspire 120 million American consumers to drastic conservation of foodstuffs.
1918, that was the year.
In a joint session of Congress, January 8, 1918.
Gentlemen of the Congress, once more, as repeatedly before, the spokesmen of the Central Empires have indicated their desire to discuss the objects of the war and possible bases of a general peace. Parleys have been in progress at Brest-Litovsk.
Thus did President Wilson begin his speech epitomizing to the world U.S. demands for a permanent peace, laying down his famous 14 points. 1.
Open covenants of peace openly arrived at.
2.
Freedom of navigation upon the seas.
3.
Removal of economic barriers.
4.
Reduction of national armaments.
5.
Impartial adjustment of colonial claims.
6.
Evacuation of all Russian territory.
7.
Evacuation of Belgium.
8.
Restoration of French territory, including Alsace-Lorraine.
9.
Readjustment of the frontiers of Italy.
10.
Guarantee of the autonomous development of Austria-Hungary.
11.
Evacuation of Romania, Serbia, and Montenegro.
12.
Guarantee of a secure sovereignty of Turkish portions of the Ottoman Empire, other nationalities now under Turkish rule guaranteed autonomy, and opening of the Dardanelles to ships of all nations.
13.
Establishment of a new Poland and guarantee of her independence.
14.
A general association of nations must be formed under specific covenants for the purpose of affording mutual guarantees of political independence and territorial integrity to great and small states alike.
And the president closed with these burning words of inspiration.
The moral climax of this, the culminating and final war for human liberty, has come, and the people of the United States are ready to put their own strength, their own highest purpose, their own integrity and devotion to the test.
But the Central Powers weren't ready yet to accede to all these demands, and the cavernous maw of the war god growled in delighted, expectant avarice as hundreds of thousands more of the youth of America, Belgium, Great Britain, Italy, and France were cast pell-mell onto the fields of Flanders.
That was the year.
Paris, France, February 4. Bolo Pasha faces a court-martial under charges of being one of the higher-ups in the German propaganda ring. On trial for his life, Pasha uses his brilliant wit in his own defense, but sparkling repartee is useless. And Bolo Pasha hears these words.
Therefore, you are sentenced to be shot.
With a cunning born of desperation, Pasha tries trick after trick to postpone his execution. Time after time he succeeds. But on April 17 at 5 o'clock in the morning, Bolo Pasha is awakened in his cell by the prison governor.
Monsieur Pasha, you have to come now.
Why? Well, what do you mean? The execution has been stopped?
Have courage, Bolo. You must prepare yourself.
Prepare? Oh, no!
And then Bolo collapses across his bed. 1 hour and 15 minutes later, he faces a squad of 12 men in a forest near Vincennes, traditional place of execution for France's traitors. Just 7 kilometers away, the dawn touches the spires of Notre Dame Cathedral. Here it glints faintly on the blue of steel. A bandage is placed over Bolo's eyes, and as it is tied, he says,
Don't tie it so tightly.
Ready! Aim! Fire!
Thus did France in the mad days of the World War deal with her traitors. Meanwhile in Russia, a bloody revolution had swept the 300-year-old Romanov dynasty from power and caused to be enacted another grim scene of execution. On July 25, Ekaterinburg was recaptured from the Bolsheviks by the White Russians. A few days later, Pierre Giard, for 13 years tutor to the Romanov children, enters the town. In company with one of the White Army's men, he makes his way to a house formerly owned by a rich merchant, Ipatyev. The two men, Giard and the Russian officer, enter the basement of the home.
Some light, please.
Yes. One moment. This candle should be...
Oh, my God!
What is the... Father in heaven!
Look! Oh, I was afraid I'd find this. I knew it.
The murderers. Perhaps it is something else.
No, nothing else. Look, bullet scars on the wall. Blood on the floor. And here, bayonet scars as though... Oh, it's horrible. Horrible.
The Imperial family. I must get out of here.
Thus did Pierre Giard find the sinister basement room where the Romanov family had fallen before the revolvers and savage bayonets of their captors. An end that came in an avalanche of horror after 300 years of imperial rule.
1918, that was the year.
September 12, from the Western Front. Day by day, the stories of Allied advances heartened those at home, lend encouragement to tired French poilus, British Tommies, and American doughboys, until...
October 4.
On behalf of Germany, Switzerland proposes an armistice to the Allies.
2 days later,
the new German Chancellor, Prince Maximilian, informs President Wilson Germany is ready to accept his 14 points. Requests an immediate armistice.
Meanwhile, in Berlin...
It is time for peace. Germany can hold out no longer. The Kaiser must abdicate. Germany must become a republic.
These were the sentiments, whispered at first, but soon becoming more adamant, more vociferous, heard upon every street corner in homes of lowly and high, from the scareheads of socialist newspapers in the German capital, until the capture of thousands of German and Austrian soldiers and hundreds of guns, with the irresistible advance of the Allied forces, the world came to the almost incredible realization that the armed might of the Central Powers was fast disintegrating, until...
Thursday, November 7, 12 o'clock noon.
In the United Press offices in the Pulitzer Building, New York, amid a welter of routine war news, the ticker taps out a staggering message.
Urgent. Armistice. Allies, Germany, signed 11 this morning. Hostilities cease 2 this afternoon. Sedan taken by American.
Hey, everybody! What? It's over! The war is over! What? It is a black and white! The war is over!
Every city in the United States went wild with joy. Offices closed, men walked arm in arm with perfect strangers. Frantic celebrations were hastily arranged. A nation freed from thoughts of the horror of war gave vent to its feeling in a mighty outburst of exuberant merrymaking. Then, suddenly in the midst of it all came doubt. Said one official of the UP,
I don't know. It seems to me the story is pretty doggone exclusive.
At 4 p.m., Secretary of War Baker said he'd received no news of an armistice. Secretary of State Lansing said the same. Gradually, the wild celebrators calmed down as the full shock of this news reached them. A nation but a few moments before, in the midst of almost drunken joy, staggered back into the mire of despair. The news of the long-awaited armistice had been false. Then...
Berlin, November 9.
In a room in the Imperial Palace, sit a group of sad men. One is Wilhelm II, Emperor of Germany, King of Prussia. Another is his eldest son, the Crown Prince. Others are Field Marshal von Hindenburg, officers of the General Staff, including General Groener, who speaks.
Majesty, the troops can hold out no longer. We have food and supplies for only 6 or 8 days.
Von Hindenburg.
You realize, Your Majesty, as well as any one of us, the uncertainty existing among some of your troops and among your people.
Well, then, I have made my decision. I wish to spare my people from civil war. Call Prince Max.
The Imperial Chancellor is waiting on the telephone, Your Majesty.
Maximilian? Yeah, I have made my decision. I will renounce the throne of Germany. But I will not abdicate as king of... But I understand. My decision is too late. The Chancellor has already announced my abdication.
With even the right of abdication torn from his hands, Wilhelm Hohenzollern fled the next day to Holland, accompanied by the Crown Prince. Then, the following day...
November 11, 6 a.m.
Representatives of the German government have signed the armistice to which the Allied governments agreed a week ago. Hostilities will cease at 11 a.m.
And the war was over, said President Woodrow Wilson, addressing another joint session of Congress.
We know that the object of the war is attained, the object upon which all free men had set their hearts, and attained with a sweeping completeness which even now we do not realize.
But in some homes throughout the civilized world, the sentiment in the hearts of those within were attuned not to shrieking sirens, not to booming guns, not to clanging bells, rather to a simple ballad of another side of war.
She is watching by the poplars, on a net with a sea-blue eye. She is watching and longing and waiting, where the long white boat may lie. And the song stirs in the silence, as the wind in the boughs above. She listens and starts and trembles. 'Tis the first little song of love. Roses are shining in Picardy, in the hush of the silver dew. Roses are flowering in Picardy, but there's never a rose like you. And the roses will die with the summer time, and a rose may be far apart.